Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Interlude Theatre. Please welcome a man who's just realised he's performing in a fee-paying school. This is him.
Thank you very much. Oh, yes. That's more like it. You're much better than last week's audience. That works on a lot of levels this week. So I'm trying to get my head around it. Hello, lovely to be back in Norwich. I love it here so much. Welcome to Richard Herring's low-level sexual tension. Low-level sexual transmission was what I put, podcast. Low-level's all one word. Though I was hanging around. I was doing snow tubing at Norfolk Snow Sports Club. In Trouse Newton today, and all the 8-year-olds there call it Rahulastapa. Then I went to the Norfolk Water Sports Club. It was different than I expect. Different. Very lively membership. I got this letter last week, and I've saved up for this week. Someone's drawn a slightly terrifying picture of me on a card. I thought, uh-oh, here we go. But it's all right. I think they're going to be okay. Dear Richard, if you were here last week, this ties in a little bit to what we were talking about. 2 years ago, our cousins paid you to call our dad a rude name. But because the guest on your show had drunk too much, don't think it was just drink, to be honest. The podcast was never played. Bloody Michael Eavis. No, it wasn't him. It wasn't him. But we'd like it very much now if we can pay you to call our uncle a rude name. There's £3.50 taped. And that is enough. £3.50. I hope they thought about, should we make it £4? No. £3.50. Could you call our Uncle Xander a gold-plated shit gibbon? I can, and I just have. Thank you very much from Bjorn and Scout. Thank you very much. He's a gold-plated... I mean, he's called Uncle Xander. He's a gold-plated shit gibbon. I need no other information. Talking of water sports, it does literally... I was doing a wee. When we're recording this, the Olympics just finished a few days ago, a week or so ago, and on the last day of the Olympics, I think it was, I was doing a wee in my toilet in my house, and it was one of those wees. I don't know why it happens. It happens increasingly as you get old, where just for no reason the stream breaks into two. Right? And you've got two streams. There's nothing there to make it happen, just two streams. So often that, as you're an older man, it'll go on, miss the toilet or hit you on the leg. You'll know you're wearing shorts. You've experienced it. But I managed to make both streams go in the toilet at the same time. And I thought, why isn't that an Olympic sport? It's meant to be celebrating all the physical amazing things. And you've seen some of the shit they have in the Olympics now. And there's nothing to celebrate weeing. You could do that next to another man who's weeing in the same way. Or woman, it doesn't have to be. It'd be difficult for a woman to do. I think the synchronized sport might have to be same sex. But, you know, that's... Because that just... That diving, the synchronized diving that Tom Daley won his gold medal for, only one of you has to be good at diving, don't they? The other one just copies. I could do it. I could be the bloke... The initial one who jumps off, then the other bloke has to copy me. So, you know, there could be other... You could do, who can do the most volume? That's not celebrated in the Olympics. Who can do... You know, you could push things along, couldn't you, with it? I don't think they should do shit and spunking, mate. No, this it's the Olympics. Have a sense of decorum. That was my idea. I'm hoping that get taken up. Right, look, we've got a fantastic guest for you this week. Let's move straight on. He's probably best known for playing Bob Fossil in The Mighty Boosh. Yeah, but what is he? Think again. We'll talk about it. Will you please welcome Matthew Holness, ladies and gentlemen? It's Matthew Holness. Bob Fossil. Bob Fossil in The Mighty Boosh.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. Thank you. You can have either of those. I don't think Jay Rayner drank either. They've been sitting there since last week. Don't think he drank either of them. But, you know, it's probably got the cleanest mouth.
That's fine.
Yeah. He has to keep it clean for his... So, Bob Fossil, you played Bob Fossil in The Mighty Boosh.
I did not. I played him one night.
Yeah, that's good enough for me.
One night on a live read-through of the Boosh's script at the Hen and Chickens, and I think Rich Fulcher was either waiting for his visa or something or couldn't be in the country, so I read the lines out on a piece of paper. That's it. I did it terribly.
Don't put yourself down, mate. You were Bob Fossil in The Mighty Boosh, and that's why you're here tonight. And I'm disappointed that that's all this you seem to be able to say about it, because it's going to be a very awkward hour now. that's all I had for you. You've done some other stuff as well. It's lovely to see you. In fact, I mentioned on Twitter about that I'd been re-watching Gut Off Marenghi, because it's on... It's on all four. If you're listening in America, it's on Amazon Prime. It's just been released on Amazon Prime. I'm not stripping,
by the way. I'm just taking my coat off.
That's okay. You know,
so it doesn't go...
Yeah. I was going to say you're not going to feel the benefit of that if you keep that on during the interview. It's lovely to see someone turn up in an anorak, though. That's nice. Some of them are stressed up. You know how much the suit costs now as well. So if you were here last... But no, it's an incredible amount of love for that. And it was really lovely to watch it. I watched it at the time. And, you know, I liked it a lot, but it's in that fug of jealousy of having been on TV recently and seeing new people coming and taking my place. I probably judged it more harshly than I should have done. But no, I didn't realise. But watching it again, I think it really stands up. And it's just as funny, if not funnier. And I was saying to you backstage, I wonder if it had come out maybe 5 years later, whether the time would have been ripe. Because that's sort of almost what happened, right? That is.
Yes, it kind of went out and didn't really do much at all. I think we were lucky. I think people discovered it on YouTube, essentially. Yeah. I think, you know, piracy basically found us our audience.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was when, that was really, I think, where most people saw it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's got this life and it's got a cult status, but annoyingly a bit too late.
Not in time to help me out in any way.
But I saw it in Edinburgh first of all. So I think I was a bit of a snob about wanting it to be the stage version on TV, which you'd made the decision not to do. The stage version, I have to say, I'm not sure if I saw both of them or I saw one of them, but I remember laughing at it more than I've laughed at anything else in the Edinburgh Fringe.
Well, it's interesting you say that because we did one version of it on stage, and then everyone was saying at that point, I hope you don't do it for stage again, even though we were obviously doing it on stage. So it was kind of, it was good. Yeah, what am I saying? I don't know. It was hard work.
So it started out as an Edinburgh Fringe show nominated for the Perrier, then the next year won the Perrier.
Yes. Yeah.
Does it come from, it seems to me that looking at your whole career over the whole thing, from the beginning to the end, you grew up in Whitstable.
Yeah.
And Peter Cushing lived in Whitstable.
He did, yes.
And used to cycle around in Whitstable.
He did cycle around a lot in Whitstable.
My friend Ben Moore would tell me about that, who was also from Whitstable. You met him as a quite young man.
I did.
Was that what sparked your interest, or was your interest in the horror stuff beforehand?
Well, I was already interested in that stuff, and I suppose, you know, I can remember my mum introducing, me and my brother, we were very little, and we saw him outside the bookshop in the high street, which was called Pirrie and Cavendish. And we were absolutely obsessed with him because of Star Wars and mainly because of the Hammer horror films that we were routinely watching every Friday, Saturday night. So my mum went over and said, oh, Mr. Cushing, you know, I have my two sons here who are huge fans of yours, of your films. And he just sort of looked at us both and he said, what films are they they're watching like that? And I think he was genuinely quite shocked that we knew him for his Hammer work.
Right. Yeah. So do you think, because you've obviously moved on and you to do more kind of horror stuff more recently, which we'll talk about later. And obviously the Garth Marenghi stuff came out of that sort of Stephen King-esque author, but a bit more of a... Is it possibly more a self-important version of Stephen King?
I think so. It was kind of all of those guys together, really. Yeah.
Was that crucible there? Was you being formed at that moment? Were you sort of preparing for this life in horror as a tiny child?
I mean, I'd always been a huge fan of horror, and I always used to just get up on the Saturday morning, having recorded them the night before, and sort of watch them with my brother on Betamax tapes the next morning. And in fact, we actually watched Alien that way, but we were so terrified that we would be like playing it through at double speed to get over the frightening bit, then rewinding it and watching it at normal speed. So that's actually how the first way I watched Alien actually was that. But yeah, I'd seen kind of most of the nasty ones.
Yeah,
very young. But that was kind of how it was then. I remember going to a friend's birthday party, and after we'd had our games and sandwiches, his elder brother just pulled out American Werewolf in London, and we watched that. And this, I think he was 7 or 8 at that age, so that's how old I was when I saw that.
Yeah. Do you remember the bit with Jenny Agutter in the shower?
I do remember
that.
That
bit, wasn't it?
We all got food poisoning that
night. Did you?
Oh, yeah. Not related.
But, no, yeah. It's not disparaging Jenny Agutter in any way.
Bad sandwich.
You know, but it's interesting. I think we were sort of video nasties came in when I was at like probably 12, 13, 14. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking, how surprised. I was just back in Somerset and I was thinking all the stuff we got up to that my parents, I don't know if they knew or they just turned a blind. I don't know. We used to go to Wells and watch sort of X films that the Odeon somehow get in as 13 and 14
year olds. I don't think my parents, for example, cared. I mean, I know, well, they did care, but they didn't realise. I think they knew we were taping this stuff and watching it. But I did get, I mean, I know they were called into my school at one point, because all I would write are horror stories. That's right. All I wrote. Every single bit of creative prose that I wrote at school all involved Dracula, Frankenstein or whatever. And they ended up calling my parents in saying, we're a bit concerned because this is all he writes, like that. And then they went, oh yeah, that'll be the horror films we're letting him watch.
But then you were clearly in, it's a chicken and egg thing, isn't it? That's what I'm sort of getting at. That I wonder whether, even subconsciously, if you knew that Peter Cushing was in your town, you know, it's just a coincidence. Yeah. But you were obviously fascinated by it, and some kids are, and some kids aren't. Some kids love that danger and the horror and being scared, and some kids. I mean, I was a bit. I think when I was that young, I was absolutely terrified. I have to say, I watched your film and was similarly terrified by it. And it stuck with me a little bit in my head, but which is possible.
I don't generally recommend people watch it, actually. Really? Genuinely, because it is quite unpleasant. So
it's not funny at all either. You've really gone off the boil since. If you think that's funny, there's something wrong with you. it's a fascinating sort of progression, but I think we had a very similar upbringing in terms of, I've read you sort of were. You got into Monty Python. You did the typical into Monty Python, learning all them all off by heart, being an annoying nerd, failing to get off with Gwyneth Paltrow, even though it worked in Sliding Doors for that guy. And then, you know, wanting to go to Cambridge in order to do the Footlights.
Well, there were three phases of what I wanted to do. First of all was, I don't know, probably just watch horror films. That's probably all I really wanted to do. I don't think I ever thought of writing them, although I did write lots of nasty stories, things like that. Then I wanted to be a rock star.
Yep.
And I went through that phase, and I wore a white boiler suit to school, thinking I could pull off the Pete Townsend 1968 look, and wore something else the next day. And then I remember thinking, well, maybe I won't make it as a rock star, so I'll try something else. And then I went. Then that's when I kind of got into comedy and wanted to go to university.
And it was sort of one of those golden periods. I know people have this idea of Oxbridge comedy, that everyone who goes to Oxbridge and does comedy
is a wanker.
Is a wanker, and B, gets their own TV shows. But actually, it's quite rare that these little clumps of sort of talent turn up, and they seem to. I've talked to other people who've been to other universities where that happens every now and again. Bristol and weirdly Durham had a huge amount of people a few years ago. And you were there at the same time as Mitchell and Webb and Richard Ayoade, obviously, and John Oliver as well.
Yeah,
at the same
time.
So you had this kind of, I would imagine, quite competitive environment to get into the Footlights with those people.
I love having done it, and I loved meeting everyone. And working with everyone, but you know, it was obviously no one was who they are now in terms of their level of success or anything. So you they're just people that are annoying you, and you're annoying them, and you're wanting to, you know, everyone wants to be the funniest person on the stage and all that. And probably everyone is a bit, I think, obnoxious at that point. Yeah. But that's how it works. I think, you know, that's how you end up doing stuff together. I mean, I remember going around to. This is funny. This is quite embarrassing to admit, but I knew that David was probably in line to be in Footlights, and he was the other person in my year. So I remember going round to David's room at Peterhouse, I think it was, and sort of asking him, "Hi, David. You probably don't know me. I've done a couple of comedy. Oh, yes, I do. I do know of you. Yes. Well, I wondered. You know, I was just thinking. You know, we both want to get into Footlights. Maybe we should do a show together. You know." And he went, "Well, that's awfully nice of you to come round, Matthew, and suggest that. But I'm actually doing one with Rob Webb next week." So that was. So he was kind of already on to that. And that's that. But that is how it kind of worked there. It was, you know, everyone very keen to put on shows, and it was wonderful because you could do a smoker pretty much each week, and you know, you would be on doing material and to a live audience, you know, as often as you wanted to, really. And that is something that I do miss, because that was good fun, and it was, you know, I would be terrified doing that now, I think. But
and it's good for the creative process, because I think you would, in comedy clubs and stand-up clubs, you tend to do the same
thing and hone the same
yeah.
bit of material over several years. But in that environment, you're sort of encouraged to be coming up with new stuff every
yeah,
time.
And it's a good discipline because you are, exactly, that's exactly it. You couldn't do the same thing the next week. You would have to come up with something new. And that's actually, I mean, that's where I first did Garth. Actually, Garth Marenghi was in a smoker at university. So, you know, that was when I first did that. So, yeah, it was, you know, useful, very useful space to kind of start working on things.
Sure. And so, like, there's a Guardian interview with you and there, or a piece about you, calling you the lost boy of comedy. Were you ever aware that you were lost, or did you know where you were?
No, I kind of knew. I sort of lost interest, I think, in that side of things. I kind of wasn't that keen on sort of just doing stuff for the sake of doing it, just to be, I suppose, to be, you know, famous or something like that. I never really found that to be much of a, didn't interest me particularly. Yeah. But it meant it was a lot harder because, it was much harder to find work.
Yeah, but you have, it's not true because you have sort of constantly been, you know, you pop up in nearly everything over those 10, 15 years before after MacArthur. It's sort of that weird thing. It's sort of doubly weird, I think, in your case, because it was like a show you did that's perceived as being a huge success that at the time was not necessarily perceived as being a big success. So it's sort of that, it's got that weird element to it. But you were so fastidious about comedy. Like, you stayed in character. You all stayed in character in all your interviews and all your photo shoots.
Yes, we did. This poor bloody photographer that that took photos of us for our first Edinburgh run, and we just thought, well, we've got to, you know, must stay in character, must do that. So this guy took our photos, and we were treating him awfully because it was Garth basically saying, "Can you come over here and just stand there? And, you know, can we do that again? That's not my good side," and all of that. So, and he was just sort of very patiently, kind of, okay, yeah, that's fine. And we felt so bad at the end that I just sort of went up and said, "I'm really sorry. I am in character." He goes, "Yes, I know." "Yes, I know you're in character." And I went, "Oh, I'm really sorry." He said, no, good luck to you all. But he was lovely chap.
But it's a sort of mature step, and you were young to sort of step away from it. And most comedians aren't mature enough to, I mean, I know you're not exactly, but to even like step back a little bit from it.
It kind of happened in a different way, I suppose, because we did a follow-up show which just didn't work as well, and what we really wanted to do was a second series of Dark Place, but unfortunately Channel 4 didn't think it worked and wanted us to do something that was easier to understand, they said. So we ended up doing an interview show which was just kind of, to be blunt, I suppose, just a bit half-baked in comparison, because I wasn't excited about it, and I don't think Richard was as either, particularly, and we felt like we were having to make something that we didn't really want to make, and it unfortunately didn't do as well. I think it was that. It was like, why would you put in all that effort for something that you're not really think is the right thing to be doing? You know what I mean?
I do, and I think you were unlucky in that. I think TV was changing, TV comedy was changing, and it was changing away from doing interesting ideas and sitcoms and anything like that, really, to being panel shows, or especially with Channel 4, I think, at that time, to sort of more sketchy shows and more kind of shock shows that kind of misunderstood Chris Morris and just did a horrible version of Chris Morris, which was just nasty rather than satirical. Maybe it didn't fit into that.
I don't think I still don't think it fits. I don't think it's odd. It's just a weird show, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
So it is a weird show. Yeah.
Which one are we talking about? The second one or the first? Both of them.
But yeah. Garth Marenghi is a weird show. But I mean, it's not compared to the Mighty Boosh or something like that. It's sort of in the same world as that. So it should be understood. It's not like complicated. I mean, I watched it again. It's not complicated.
No.
It's just a nuts hospital where supernatural things happen, based on. Well, I was interested in what you're saying. I was talking to you backstage. I mean, I got obsessed with Diagnosis Murder, which is Dick Van Dyke and his son. and Chachi from Happy Days solving crimes, even though they work in a hospital, which I thought that's got to be the main influence for this hospital-based thing.
I think there were lots. I mean, Rich and I watched so much stuff. We watched Quincy, we watched TJ Hooker, we watched a lot of stuff that wasn't really that horror-based.
And you say TJ Hooker.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite an obscure show that I do remember, which William Shatner...
So it's a cop show. TJ Hooker is a cop show. William Shatner is a disgruntled right-wing cop. And Romano, his partner, who was essentially Sanchez in our heads, you know, and I think there's four of them, I think.
Right.
But it was that idea, the way they did those shows then, it was just very, you know, no nonsense. And in fact, I've just started watching V, the original V miniseries. And the first 2 minutes of that is hilarious. You just can't believe that people would get away with that kind of script and that kind of delivery. It's brilliant. It's absolutely amazing.
It was, but people were obsessed with that show. It was during the year the Olympics got cancelled, wasn't it? And it became, I think ITV bought it in to replace the Olympics. So everyone watched it and it was... Yeah. Yeah, we were terrified by that and thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
And don't tell me it wasn't good.
Well, I've still not seen it, you see. Okay. So it's actually one I didn't see. No, so really. I've got it lined up.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What I was going to ask you was, do you ever see the possibility of doing a possum Garth Marenghi crossover? Because the possum, which is, if you haven't seen it, which... Probably some of you won't have seen it. It's got a kind of terrifying, I mean, puppet. It's sort of meant to be a puppet.
Yeah, it's a sort of...
It's a spider.
It's a sort of spider with a Sean Harris head.
Yeah.
That's basically... I don't mean that as a disparaging comment against Sean. He stars in the film, so it is a copy of his face. So yes. It's quite literally...
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
But it's not that different from the little eye child, the one-eyed child.
No. Well, that's it. And actually, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that literally was... Sorry, not literally. There's lots of stuff that was filmed that couldn't put in because it did look just look very silly.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's kind of, it's the spinal tap. It's a very fine line.
It's... I mean, it's not... Possum is definitely not fun. There's not a moment in Possum that you're thinking, this is funny. So you managed to cut those bits out.
I did cut those bits out.
It isn't funny.
And but I'll put those bits in with a Garth version.
Yeah, put them into the. Did you find it hard for you know the press and people's response to it to move away from comedy into horror?
It was easier to do that. I'd spent years sort of wasting time really working on. I did a short film called A Gun for George, which was a sort of crime. Started off as a I kind of wanted to do a comedy crime thing in the same way that I'd done Dark Place, but actually in the making of the film, it became a much more serious short film. And then I spent ages trying to turn that into a feature version, a feature film version, and could never quite pull it off because tonally it was half comedy and half not, and I couldn't quite get the balance. But I wasted so much time doing that that then the people who were funding it just, can you just make it all out broad comedy and at least give us some return on our investment? And I realized then it was a lot harder to move from doing comedy stuff into a serious film, which is really the way I wanted to take it. So I found that difficult for a long time, trying to get my head in a different space and get people, I suppose, to take what I was doing as a serious work. And I thought I would have that problem with Possum, but oddly enough, I think because it was horror, it was less of a leap for people. So it didn't seem that difficult going from doing comedy horror to serious horror, because people sort of lump it all in, oh, it's that hot, you know. So it felt easier. It was easier to do that than it was something completely different.
And was it as horrifying was it troublesome to film? Because it's a troublesome subject, and Sean stayed in
character,
which
yes.
I can't believe, what was that like to have someone in the character of that character and you're trying to, can you direct them? You're allowed to say, do it in a different way if they're in character? How do they respond to that in the method?
Well, yes, I mean, I would have to say, you know, can you do it in a different way, character name rather than Sean?
Right,
you know?
Okay.
So, yes, it was, you know, it's odd, you have to, it was a bit of a learning curve because, you know, coming from comedy where you can kind of just say to whoever's doing it, that was a shit one, wasn't it? Should we do that again? Like that. And they'll go, would you think it was shit? Okay, we'll do it again. But everyone's essentially fine with, very early on, I learned that that's not how you treat proper actors. You know, you kind of, it's, so I sort of knew that a little bit going into the film, but it was, you know, it was a very depressing shoot, I have to be honest, because it was pretty intense, and that's what Sean needed to have in order to be that character.
Sure.
But yes, it was pretty dark, I have to say, and you know, there are certain scenes in the film which were very tough to film. And I think everyone sort of went home very depressed and thought, thank God that one's over. Let's do some of the exteriors tomorrow.
I should say it's really good and you should watch it. Despite what Matthew says, it's amazing. But I think also you've got that feel of that horror, and it is reminiscent of that 70s, the childhood thing of something sticking with you,
yeah,
and you thinking, I might dream about this tonight, and I'm not very happy about that. So it's got proper, it's properly, it creeps into you in the same way that the puppet does. And I know that there was an influence of public information films.
Yeah, well, they used to play them all the time when I was a kid, and you know, very old ones as well. But they would play them between children's programming, and we'd get played them at school, and they were absolutely terrifying. And in fact, there was one that terrified me so much about a guy who, there are different bits of his life, and each scene from his life as he goes from a baby to a middle-aged man is people basically just feeding him more and saying, go on, have another one, go on, have another, go on, you're not having a half, have a full pint. And I saw that one about 10 times, and it ends with him in a hospital bed with his heart monitor going, with, you know, eating too much. Not that it's really terrified me into not eating, evidently, but it stuck with me. And I couldn't find it for years because I bought all these DVDs of old public information films. I couldn't find it. And then some very kind guy on the internet found it and said, no, you haven't been, you know, making it up. It's not a nightmare come to life. It did exist. Here it is. And of course, it's hilarious. You look at it now, and it's, you know, I can't remember, there's some famous actor in it. I can't remember who he is. But it's a really, you know, that for children, it's terrifying.
It was sort of weird, and they do stick with you. Every time I go past an electric substation, I think of the guy, there's a guy who chucked his frisbee in.
That's
and then
right.
climbs up.
Yeah.
And literally every time, there's one quite near my house, and every time I go past it, I think about not climbing in there after a frisbee.
I think they were great things. I actually think we should still have them. They should have made some for, you know, the pandemic. It would have been a lot easier to know what to do if there were some proper public information films.
It's true.
You know.
It is true. And again, it's sort of not the... I know it's not the influence on the film, but you've made these comments about how a lot of these public information films, in hindsight, they're fronted by Rolf Harris and Jimmy Savile.
Yeah.
Who are more dangerous than the thing that they're...
That's right. And in fact, we... You know, I was actually playing one of them to my daughter the other day. We were just sort of zipping through this Charlie Says DVD because she was quite interested. And actually thought, you know, some of them, they stand up. You know, they're worth children. It's worth children seeing them, I think. Anyway, I wasn't forcing her to watch them or anything like that. But he came on, and my partner and I just looked at each other. And our daughter was going, "Who's this funny man?" Like that. Going, we'll just speed on. We won't talk about that one.
It's a shame he scrambled his way to the bank. That's what I say. It's a shame he didn't die. Rolf Harris in that. Do you remember? Somehow managed to scramble my way to the bank. Couldn't swim. Frightened the wits out of my mum and dad. You can bet they have me. I couldn't fucking remember everything. The other day I started singing the theme tune to Welcome Back, Cotter. Do you remember Welcome Back, Cotter? I don't remember Welcome Back, Cotter. I know the entire theme tune to Welcome Back, Cotter. It was an American sitcom from the 1970s. The only notable thing about it was John Travolta was in it, and that's the only thing I can remember about it. In my mind, I can remember Cotter. I went to look it up. In my mind, African-American... teacher, moustache, is white. It's completely white. All I can remember is the entire theme song, word for word. Welcome back. I got the first line wrong because I thought, you know, before the internet, you couldn't Google anything, so you just had to make up your own, if you couldn't understand. So I thought the first line was, welcome back, your dreams are all ticking out. I thought that was the words. But I listened to it again, and it's your dreams were your ticket out. But I knew all the rest. I looked at it and I'd got all the words basically right. One little bit I couldn't remember. And why did I start singing it? I didn't even watch it. Do you have stuff like that? You've got a favourite?
Well, I've reached those years where I think I know the lyrics to stuff and and I clearly don't. But I, what was the? Oh, no, I can't even remember this. It's not. Move on, Richard. I can't remember.
Okay.
It's going to be
remember,
an anecdote that just dies.
You're a bit younger than me, but there was a lot of. The other one that I remember the entire theme tune to is The Lost Islands. Do you remember The Lost Islands? Oh, I'm looking at young people. There once was a lonely man who had wealthy man who had a wonderful idea to get children of all races with all kinds of faces together into a sailing ship. There were 40 boys and girls. They would sail the ship around the world. Globe, so they called it the United World. It honestly goes on forever, the song. It's one of the best opening titles you've ever got because it tells you the whole... And it's all on YouTube and they don't... It's all in the theme tune and they just start it after the theme tune. They get blown across the reef. Who remembers The Lost Islands? I'd be great if people just remembered... I could have Peter Kay's job if people just remembered the things I remember. It doesn't work as well when people don't remember it. People don't want to pay to see that. So that's that. But it's kind of not, it's weird the way, I mean, I think there's a similarity in those horror films, the things you see. The Tales of Witness Madness is the one I kept on seeing again and again, which is one of those, one where it's three or four different stories that they all come together at the end. And I'd always see that when I was coming home late or even as a kid, you'd see it. And that really stuck in my mind. And the images from that stick in your mind. And I guess that's sort of what's happened with you, that you've seen these.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing Jaws for the first time. I can remember the bowl of crisps that I was eating when I saw Quint spit blood out.
Yeah.
Because I literally couldn't have... Someone seemed to hand me this bowl of crisps just as he sort of went... and they were bright white, very white crisps. They were obviously cheap. They were probably yellow label because that's all we got. And they were sort of like... They don't make them anymore, but they're almost like bone-shaped. Bony... crisps that they forced upon us back in the day, but I couldn't eat them.
Well, it was the wrong choice for Jaws, wasn't it? That was unwise choice. The ship was just 3 weeks from shore when a hurricane bore down. The waves were as big as mountains. They thought they would surely drown. They gathered up the children and rowed away from the wreck. They didn't count them. There wasn't time. Three children were left behind.
I like this.
Yeah. It's honestly about five verses long, and that's the opening titles. It's so good. I want to make the modern Lost Islands with you. Let's do it.
All right, okay.
Even though you haven't seen it and don't know what it is.
I'm sold.
And the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, which I thought was a great show and that had an amazing cast, which is the sort of the first thing you did out of university, I'm guessing, was Bruiser.
Bruiser, yes.
It was Robin David. It's Robin David, Tim from The Office.
Yes, Martin.
Yeah. And Olivia Colman.
Olivia Colman.
It's pretty good.
And Charlotte Hudson.
Yeah, Charlotte Hudson. I really remember loads. There was a ventriloquist dummy character in that. There was a ventriloquist, didn't it?
Yes, Martin did that. Yes, yes.
So I remember that. Yeah. Because I'm obsessed with ventriloquist dummies. Yeah. As you know, that's what I thought Possum was going to be a fun film. Were you aware that this was an amazing cast at the time?
No, because we weren't. You know, we were just... That was literally the first show we did.
When did it go? It went out quite late at night.
It was 1999 or 2000, I think. And it did go out quite late. I remember going home to my flat and asking my landlord if I could just watch it, and he said no. He was watching TV, and I said, but it's... I'm in it. He said, that's all right, you can record it, can't you? Something like that. Wow. So, yeah, I didn't actually see it go out the first time.
Okay.
But yes, it was... our first job.
I mean, imagine going back to the people who decommissioned that and saying now and going, look at all these people who are in this.
Yeah, it was. Have you seen it?
I remember watching it and enjoying it and thought it was pretty good because I think it was, you know, it was a bit out there. It was a bit, you know, all sketch shows are a little bit variable and like late night, whatever it was, ITV, Channel 4.
Yeah, it was BBC.
BBC.
I think, yeah.
One of them. Channel 5.
Channel 5, live TV. Or,
Dave, yeah. Could have been on Dave.
It was nice to do because it was the first bit of work. It was good experience, first time working in with cameras and crew and all of that. But
and written by...
Written by lots of people.
Stephen Merchant and Ricky Gervais?
I think so, yeah. Lots of people. It was a huge group of people writing it. Yes.
It's funny though, isn't it? It sort of is funny when you, and we'll get onto The Office because you're in The Office as well.
Yeah.
But it's funny how the bit of luck that is involved in something turning over and becoming like a classic thing, which I often talk about that with The Office, and that The Office sort of the BBC weren't really behind it, and it was actually other people saying this is good and it getting a repeat that was when it suddenly took off.
Yeah.
And there's just that little bit of luck.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it feels like it's, it feels like luck is hugely important because there's stuff that, you know, I don't think you can predict what's going to take off and what's not at all.
No.
So you just have to keep kind of working as and when you can, really. Yeah.
And with The Office, where you played Simon, the IT guy. Yep. Was that a character that you had created beforehand? Because it seems it was out of all the like vignette characters, it seemed like this is something that's come from somewhere else.
Well, I'd played a similar character in Bruiser. There was a kind of internet nerd in that who was based on a flatmate of ours that we used to. I didn't write it, but it was based on someone we knew, and I don't know whether Ricky and Stephen had. Whether that influenced them in creating that, I have no idea. It may well be, you know, the lots of these types, I'm sure it was, you know, independently came about. But I knew that I'd sort of played a similar character and they probably thought, oh, you know, he's probably suited to that. So, but yeah, no, it was, I suppose I always like, you know, just assholes, really, you know, I enjoy playing them. So it was quite good fun to do.
And it was, what, was that in the first series of The Office or both?
Second.
Series? Second,
think, yeah. Second.
So it was already quite a big deal by the time you were,
Yeah,
it's sort of, The Office is so fascinating and I think in terms of, I mean, it's unbelievable. What's happened to that show.
Yeah, but it's still, I mean, kind of, I suppose for us, you know, and you probably knew this as well, we kind of knew it was a very special show, and particularly his performance, Ricky's performance. And I think, you know, if you put it on now, that still is very, very clear that that is a proper classic. You know, it's a classic comic character. It's, you know, it's absolutely wonderful. And I think, yeah, it's odd because a lot of these things, they become very popular, and you wonder if it's really gonna, if it's just the time, you know, and if it's gonna actually last. But I think that one certainly is, is great.
Yeah, but you know, it is part. It's partly being, it's the right place, right time. It's everything. Yeah. It's a few things have got to come together.
Yeah,
and sometimes they don't. It's sort of, would you? I mean, obviously, you'd rather have something that was a huge success and made you millions of pounds. But as an artist, would you rather have the kind of what the Garth Marenghi has? I think it's sort of so special that, like, that 20 years on, or nearly 20 years on, that people are still that into something that was a very kind of underground hit.
Yeah, I mean, what I loved about doing About It is we were basically allowed to do what we wanted, effectively, which wouldn't happen now, I don't think. And we were very blessed in that they let, you know, we hadn't really had much TV experience, but they let us, you know, create it, write it and direct it and edit it together. So we were very fortunate. And I think it was just very sad not to have that chance again, I think. And I think that the struggle, it would be lovely. I would be perfectly happy working on anything that was, you know, very small, not particularly popular, as long as I could do it regularly. But I think the problem is there just aren't that opportunity. You spend most of your professional life hoping to get another chance to sort of do something. And I think that's the thing, you know, if you could kind of keep at it, because you get, you know, you obviously get better the more you do, and you want to practice and you want to, you know, keep working on stuff. I think that's the difficult thing about choosing stuff that's not got immediate appeal, is that, you know, there aren't many opportunities to experiment and just, you know, unlike in, you know, when we, I suppose, like the Pythons and that could do that and got better and better at it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think it's that. It would be brilliant if I knew I could get up each day and work on something. But that's the difficulty, I think.
Well, you know, I think you and I have had a sort of, you know, not the same by any means, but a sort of similar decade and a half where we've been writing a lot of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, the truth is most of it never sees the light of day. And it's a very frustrating way to live, and I find it just increasingly, you still seem to get up and do stuff and mainly be writing. I find the writing thing so hard now, just because it's like like something keeps punching you in the face and you keep going back to it, you know. it's quite a difficult thing to put yourself through that.
But it's odd, because I think, like, in a sort of different but similar way, I mean, I'm more comfortable sitting writing, but I've found that I've become less comfortable getting out and probably doing stuff like this.
Okay.
You know, I'm, because I haven't performed on stage for so long.
Yeah.
And I kind of envy, like, you and people like you could sort of going out and still doing stuff. Yeah. Whereas, you know, I'm more comfortable stuck in a room and closing the door and putting on.
Yeah. And you live in Norwich.
I live in Norwich.
You could have lived anywhere in the world, Matthew. Why did you? You're a writer. You don't have to live. You can live anywhere. Why would you live in Norwich?
Norwich is fantastic.
Well, it's going down well with the people in here, but once this is out in the world, the cheers will be coming for a different. It is fantastic. It is. What do you like best about Norwich?
I like everything about it. It's always been a very friendly city.
Yeah.
I found very friendly. It's got a real, you know, sense of itself. There's tons of stuff. It loves writers. It's a very creative place. It's just brilliant. Love it. Yeah.
Good. I like the fact it's still its own. I travel around the UK a lot, and most towns you go to could be the same town you were just in.
Yeah.
But when you're in Norwich, you know you're in Norwich. And there's hardly... it's the smell. They don't make mustard here anymore. It can't be that. So it's... but no, it is. Most places have just become homogenised. And, you know, I'm not saying that there's still some shops on the high street that you know from other places, but you're in the shopping centre in most places and you wouldn't know where you were. Whereas I think in Norwich, you go, okay, there's not this shop anywhere else.
That's right.
There's not the severed hand of a man from the 15th century in a museum, mummified anywhere else. That's no one. Anyone else would have thrown that in the bin. Not Norwich. Let me ask you some. I'm going to ask you some new emergency questions. Let me see. What have I got in the back of this book first of all? because I think there might be a... I want to ask you, if you, of all the art galleries and museums in the world, got together and said, we love Matthew Holness, we want to get, let him have one thing of his choice from any art gallery or museum, is there one thing, don't, you can't choose the hand, that you would... that you would like to have from anywhere? It can be an artifact or a painting or a sculpture. Or...
Can I have the Anglo-Saxon mask from Sutton Hoo?
Yeah.
Yeah?
You can, except I would quite like it, but yeah, you can.
Yeah. I can't go there now because everyone's turning up to Sutton Hoo.
I don't want to look like the guy who went because of the
Netflix. I'll take the mask and go off somewhere myself and just wear it for a bit.
Yeah. It's a good mask.
It's a good mask.
Yeah. How big do you think it is? And like, it's quite...
They were much smaller then, weren't
they? I think
they
were small. I think we're both quite big-headed men. I think we'd try and get it on and it would break, yeah. Bits would fall off. And it's quite fallen apart.
Might need to get it, widened.
Can you widen this? It's a good choice. There's some good stuff. But there was a lot of good stuff in Sutton Hoo.
It's brilliant, yes. But I've just read... I've just read some Anglo-Saxon poetry.
Have you?
And I have.
Lockdown going well for you, eh?
It's been a good lockdown. I tried to learn Old English recently. That is something I tried to do. I got a book on Teach Yourself Old English, and I think I got Hier was Edward. You hold a dukin or something, and this here.
It's Edward, no good just saying English words in a funny way. That's not. We can all do that.
I wasn't very good at it.
What did you study at university?
I studied English.
You did. You do all Beowulf and.
I did. Well, no, I didn't, because that was Oxford. You see, you did Old English, but we started Middle English.
I didn't do Beowulf. Okay. I didn't really do any history either. So that was the. I just did comedy, and I don't know how I got away. Right, I'm going to ask you this. Look, the one that's come up is like a very, very horror-inspired question. Would you rather be imprisoned for a murder that you didn't commit, or for a murder that you did commit?
Depends who I've killed. I'd rather be in prison for not having murdered someone.
Okay, yeah. That's nice of you.
Don't want to, prison's one thing, hell's another.
Okay, that's fine. Do you think there's a hell?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Who decides who gets?
Maybe this is the hell.
Who could be?
In fact, Kipling and H. Rider Haggard had this very conversation.
Did they?
Yes, and they discussed whether they were both firmly of the belief that this is hell, and we are the life experience is us paying for our sins in a former life.
Yeah, that could be true. Did Kipling and that other bloke you said to us have a discussion about this? Would you rather own a car with Jimmy Carr, a lorry with Laurie Anderson, or a van with Van Morrison? Did they talk about that? Did they have that discussion?
I'll probably go for the car with Jimmy Carr because he's got a very good memory.
Yeah.
He has got a memory. He will remember someone that he's spoken to very briefly, 20 years before, and he will have perfect recall and will be very nice and polite, so I'll go for that.
Okay.
And then we can talk about, I don't know, someone we met 20 years
before. That's good. I didn't know that about Jimmy Carr. How do you know that about Jimmy Carr?
Because I was with someone who he'd met 20 years ago, briefly, and knew exactly who he was, his name, and was very nice, yeah.
What sport would you like to see introduced into the Olympics? Because I've come up with you can't have the synchronized pitch.
It's
pretty impressive when it's pretty good to get all the piss in when it's you've got no control over the second string, but to control it, it's like this. They weren't like close. They were like that. Both every drop in the toilet.
Well, what about the fumble? When you fumble your micturating, you have a slight bodily spasm and you miss and there's a moment of panic as it starts going everywhere and you have to be very quick on the draw to direct it back or you have to be very, very thorough in your cleaning of the area.
I mean, if that happened in an Olympic situation when you're being judged, I imagine that would be all. That would be the same.
You have to wait a long time for the fumble, but you could have distractions. Yeah. You could have...
It'd be awful if it happened. That would be the same as that girl who got the wobbles on the gymnastics, wouldn't it? Oh, no, I did. I weed all over the floor. It just went. People, girls think, ladies think that, you know, it's an efficient, it's a very inefficient system for delivering urine, especially as you get older. I'm going to come up with another question for you.
You find yourself sitting down more.
Do I find myself sitting down?
Sitting down more rather than sort of risk.
Oh, to go to the toilet. Yeah. I thought it was a new emergency question.
No,
see. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do find myself sitting down quite a lot around the way. Oh, and the toilet.
Sitting down for the toilet, you know.
I've experimented with it. But I just don't go back. Even when, like at the moment, my toilet seat and the toilet I go to at night time, which is the one outside our bedroom, if you lift both lids at the same time, the lid comes off.
Ah.
Right? If you do one at a time, then it's fine. But you have to move the lid because the flush is behind the lid, so you can't just leave the lid down. So you've got to be moving stuff around.
What kind of flush?
It's a dual, so you can go long or short flush, two button flush. And
wise.
And I found that distracts me that I forget to sit down, but then I start doing my wee at night. If you've got bare legs at night, same what we're talking about, you kind of go, oh, fuck, a lot of this isn't going into the toilet. A lot of this is going on to me. Now, do I wipe it off or do I just get into bed and let the sheets do the job? So I should sit down, but I find if I sit down, like, I don't know, the bladder goes into a different position
it
or something.
It sort of folds, doesn't it?
And so I do a bit of
a certain amount,
yeah.
But then you have to stand and do the rest.
The last, so you might as well stand up. Because the second bit, and then that goes all over the place.
Yeah.
So it's a good theory, but, you know.
In practice, it's just, not...
Okay.
All right.
Did Kipling ever discuss this one with H.R. Geiger, the Geiger counter guy? Would you rather have an extra thumb on each hand? You've still got one thumb, you've just got another thumb on
another
the side.
Another one.
Each side.
Yep.
Or be able to shoot poo out of your bum like a cannon. It's gone very toilety, hasn't it, this episode? Very toilety.
Oh, double thumb.
Yeah, the reason I saw online something, you can buy an extra thumb thing that you wear like a glove and it gives you an extra thumb. I didn't think it was that good. They seemed impressed. You can hold something, then you can hold it something else.
Yeah, good. Yes. Yeah.
I'd go for the poo cannon. That's not good. That one's there's some. Okay. All right. Would you rather have real life VAR,
the
controversial virtual assistant referee used in football matches, so they replay.
Oh, football, right, okay.
They can replay the football and someone...
Sorry about that.
Someone could replay that. So you could play back any argument or incident and find out what was said exactly and who was in the right or wrong.
Yes, that one.
With an independent arbiter. So there'd be a referee sitting off when you're having an argument with your partner or children or friends.
Yeah.
They'll come in and go, no, you didn't say that. You said this and you were wrong.
Oh.
Or only be able to earn a living as a lookalike of someone famous. Although you'd be allowed to style your hair and wear appropriate clothes, you would not be able to change your face to look like a famous person. You would have to choose the famous person you think you most resemble and then only be employable as their lookalike. You can't change your initial decision, even if in later years you start to resemble someone else. Or if you are much too old to be the person you chose. Who would be the person you choose to be the lookalike of if you
Pete
had
Townsend
to?
And Pete Townsend circa 1968.
Do you think there's a lot of call for a Pete Townsend lookalike?
a short, rotund Pete Townsend. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Okay,
so would you choose that over... No, you'd choose the VAR over...
Well, it depends. If that's actually going to... Yeah. It'd be nice
to know. I get into so many arguments with my wife that I can't really remember what any of the previous stuff was. Then she'll say, I said something, and I go, I didn't say that. Or she'll say this, and I can't remember how it began or what we're arguing about.
And the only way out of that is to sort of just have your phone on permanent record.
Yeah.
Which I have considered.
But, yeah.
No, I go for the I go for the boiler suit, the Pete Townsend.
Pete Townsend
impersonator.
I wonder how many people would employ you. Did you? I don't think you'd get any work. Because you don't look like Pete Townsend, and also no one would want Pete Townsend to near. What circumstances? Do you want that bloke who wrote that, said he was writing a book about paedophiles, but then didn't never came out? Do you want him to come to your party? And I should point out, he doesn't look like him either. The bloke doesn't. He does. He's got the boiler suit. It's a child's boiler suit he's wearing that may have fitted him in one time. It's strange given the history. Ah, good. I feel good about myself. Just trying to remember the last voice verse of the Lost Islands. There's faces in the jungle. I can't remember. There's a man in a mask. There's someone in the jungle. His face is in a mask. They got it done so they can escape at last from the Lost Islands. Can't believe you don't watch The Lost Islands.
No.
Too young, it's the problem. You're
too young for that, yeah.
Does anyone at all remember The Lost Islands? Yeah. Oh, thank God. Can you bring like 400 friends with you who also remember The Lost Islands to the next gig? Because this will be going. I mean, it's gone quite well given no one. It's like the comedy of not recognition. It's good, isn't it? Just hears nice to hear a song, isn't it? Let's hear a bit of a song. Okay, here's one. I'm going to ask you some more questions about yourself, aren't you, Mike? We haven't got much time. I'll waste some of it with this. Would you rather it turned out we were all just characters in a video game being played by a slightly bored teenager, or that the last 10 years of your life had just been a dream and you're about to wake up back where you were a decade ago?
Ooh. Well,
That's because you've got a child who's about 9 years old, yeah. So you would be going back to pre-having a child.
Pre-having a child? Well, wow. Yes, then. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'd go for that. I mean, it'd be kind of nice. It would be sort of nice. It depends whether it plays out the same, isn't it? I mean, it would play out, the first bit might play out the same, but it might not. Because then things change too much once you've changed this. But if you got a chance to go back 10 years and relive the 10 years you've done...
I think that would be good. I'd like to do that. Yeah.
No, another go. I'd go back more than 10.
More than 10?
Yeah, I'd go back. I mean, I sort of didn't like my 20s, but I wouldn't mind another go at my 20s. I'd like to be 35 again, just because it was pretty cool. I was having a good time. I wasn't married and I didn't have any kids. It was brilliant. I had quite... I would do exactly what I did this first time.
Yes, you... Yeah.
Yeah, but...
We would just be here exactly in the same place. Yeah. We wouldn't have learned a thing. No. Yeah. Yes, that one. No.
This is a good question based on the Lost Islands. Would you rather be shipwrecked for 6 months or live in an igloo for the next decade?
Ooh.
Yeah. I'll give you some little extras. You'd have to survive on the desert island and catch your own food and make your own shelter, but it'd be nice and warm. The igloo would be as near to your current home as possible, so you could still go to work, etc. But you wouldn't be allowed in your current home. You could keep your stuff in the igloo, but it's not a very big igloo.
I'll do the igloo. Do the igloo. Because there's that fantastic kid, isn't there, who's been camping out for charity.
Oh, there is,
absolutely,
yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. So, yes, he would put me to shame, unfortunately.
Why do you do it, but don't do it for charity?
Yeah.
Do it, raise some money, and then just go, oh, did you think this was for charity? Never said that.
But igloos are cozy, aren't they?
They're nice inside, yeah. I don't know if it would melt, though, if it was in Norwich.
It would, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. So, what are you working on right now before we... What's going to come next?
Well, I'm working on a script at the moment. I hope we'll be filming this year, but I don't know.
Okay.
But I can't say anything else on that at the moment. But I'm busy on... various sort of screenplays and a collection of stories, hopefully, all of which I can't really say anything about at this point. So, kind of not a very helpful answer.
It's good. I like unhelpful answers. Are you happy, Matt?
Am I happy? Yes, yeah. I am happy.
Yeah,
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a good... You know, I think it's what you've done is very admirable, I think, and also... But I think you've stayed true to your own path.
I hope so.
And it's what you've done, you know, absolutely fantastic stuff. It's sort of weird. I don't know, it's weird to me a journalist would... It really annoyed me, that quote. Even though it's a nice interview, the rest of the interview is very nice about you. But it's sort of annoyed me that someone who works in an industry couldn't understand that, A, it's possible someone makes a decision to do something different than everyone else, or B, they might, you know, they might have to go that way anyway. It's not necessarily in your hands. But, you know, that I think to sort of decide to go, right, this isn't going the way I want it to go, a lot of people don't have the bravery to sort of
I can't think that there's anything worse than I think, because, you know, performing and working in TV and film, I think there's something, it's an odd thing. The more you do it, it's very strange. You know, when you start doing it, you notice that it's a very different world from normality, you know. And I think if the worst thing would be to be doing stuff you don't really, you know, believe in. And I don't know, I just found that it didn't feel like me, you know what I mean? So... I'd far rather be doing something, you know, low-key, but I'd like to be doing more of it. that's all, I suppose.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it's... even just that, you know, that you've created that amazing feature film that's been, you know, very heralded correctly, I think. You know, that's an astonishing achievement to get something together, to get the funding, to create it. It's very, you know, and it's such a bold subject because there's it's basically... there's hardly any dialogue in it at all. I mean, there is some, but it's so to write a feature like that that's so visual and so about creating a mood, which is done brilliant through the music and all the shots and everything. But it's a terrific achievement. I hope everyone will watch Possum. I hope everyone who hasn't seen Garth and Marenghi will watch Garth and Marenghi again. And I hope everyone who's seen it will watch it again. I hope everyone will have a crack at it. And I hope you're doing... I want you to do another series of Garth and Marenghi with you all. You all being the proper age. Imagine doing it now. It'd be good. You're the proper age to be Garth. It's the same thing as Alan Partridge. Is you are sort of a little boy being an older man.
Yeah.
Now look at you. Now look at you.
Yeah. Well, you know, never say never and all of that. Yeah. But... No, in fact, never more. Never again.
I think you're probably correct. Your decisions and your choices are very well thought out and good. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a massive round of applause to my fantastic guest, Matthew Holness. Thank you very much,
Thank
Norris.
You very much.
It's been so good to be back in front of a big crowd. Thank you very much for coming. See you again next time. Thank you. Goodbye. You have been listening to Hullister Bar with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Matthew Holness. The music is by Scant Regard. I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm indebted to George, the incompetent sound man who came along for this gig and was actually very competent. He's going to have to change his brand. I'm very much indebted to my good friend, Chris Evans. Not that one. No, not that one either. Not the other one you're thinking of. It's the one from Go Faster Stripe, but I don't know why you need that clarified every single time we do this. Thank you to everyone at the Norwich Playhouse, everyone to the fantastic Norwich Festival where we recorded these shows, and in that big tent and at the school, at the cathedral as well. They weren't really involved, but we could see it in the distance. So thank you to the people of Norwich in your mustard-smeared faces. It was an absolute delight to perform for you, and thank you all for coming. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production, and we're back live at the Leicester Square Theatre. Head to richardherring.com/gigs to find out who the guests are. Many of them are sold out, but you can watch them all with the live stream, richardherring.com. You can find out about that if you're a monthly badger. Remember, you can get that stream for half price per episode or per series. It's well worth it. And stay being a badger.
because otherwise we will literally lose money if you do it once and then go away again. Stay for a few months at least, and then we'll put all your money towards making more podcasts, because we are the good guys here. That's right, you heard me. We're the good guys. See you next time on Raha La Stepa. Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And go fasterstripe.com. You can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show if you enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.